Okay, so we were in the middle of the Lo Yom Velo Laila Gemara, which is always wonderful.
I'm sure there's extra menachim.
So, yeah, there definitely is. So the Gemara had said, let's remind ourselves. So in the middle of this discussion about Bittel Torah, or really the Kiyum of Talmud Torah, to be more precise, the Gemara tells this wonderful story of Dama, Ben Achoto, the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, and he said to him, people like me, who learn Gantz Teire, they know everything. Sorry, I have source sheets, by the way.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Greek wisdom, just for you. And I figured before Hanukkah, this is what we should get to. So, I've learned Kol HaTorah Kula. What?
Was that planned out?
Yes.
I didn't even think about that.
Yes, it was planned out. It was two pages.
Oh.
Two pages.
Two pages.
Now so I, can now I like, learn Chachma Yevanis?
Right. And what is it? Different.
What?
The margins are different.
Good. Yes, it is. And he what does he say to him? He says, you're allowed to learn it if you can find time, which is Lo Yom Velo Laila. Right? Time, which is neither day nor night. Oh, I love this. Good. So we noted last week. So we noted last week. You can read the tshuva I have about Torah in space over there somewhere. I printed it out of.
The biggest question in high school.
Good. I printed out the tshuva over there by Rav Kasher. I saw that it's still lying around. So, anyways. So we noted that the simple pshat in the Gemara is the main focus here is Bittel Torah. Bittel Torah. That's the context of the Gemara. Lima Torah, Bittel Torah, etc. Literal, not literal. We dealt with that last week. But what I want to deal with this week is the second question is, okay, well, what is this Chachma Yevanis that he brings up and what does this tell us? Okay, so simple pshat. What is Chachma Yevanis? So,
that means a lot of things.
So look at Tosfos. I don't know why I put it on the source sheet, but look at Tosfos. So Tosfos says, Tema v'chilo yodeh de gazrua said, I don't understand. How could he even ask about Chachma Yevanis? Doesn't he know that besides for the Talmud Torah problem, there is a formal gzera against learning Chachma Yevanis? Good. So what is this thing? So if you turn now to the Gemara that he says, the Samach Dalet Amud Beis.
Oh, bro.
So the Gemara tells you on Samach Dalet Amud Beis, following story. Look at Tanur Rabbanan.
Yeah, okay, Kishit
Tzara. Tanabanan, got it? Like, three lines after with the Gemara, four lines after with the Gemara. Tanabanan. Kishit Tzaru Malche Beit Chashmonai, Zel Zeh. When the Chashmonaim, not in time of Hanukkah, but later on, started fighting it out. Vaya Horkunis mi bachutz, varistabolis mi bifnim. So Horkunis is on side, and Aristabolis, Samach Dalet Amud Beis. I wrote it out for you. On the source sheet, what line to look at in the Gemara.
Oh, really? I
didn't copy and paste it. I told you where to look.
Yeah.
Because as long as Menachos, I try to make you look inside. V'chol yom v'yom hayu mishal shalan dinarim b'kupa u'malan t'midin. So every day, they'd give them some money, and they would give them the karban tamid. And hayisham zaken echad sheyamakir b'chachma yivanit. And there was an elderly man who knew this Greek wisdom. Laws lahem chachma yevanis. So he said to them, "In chachma yevanis, and Amar lahen." Said, "You know why you can't conquer? You can't win this war. Calls mancho skin bit avodah in imsarim biyetchem. As long as you perform the avod in the Beit Hamikdash, they won't be given over into your hands." So what did they do? Machar shil shalul lahen dinarin bekupa. So next day they gave them the money. And instead of putting a carbon in to raise up, or they had this pulley system, you'd put money in, you know, you'd trade it. This way, they would keep the avoda going, but they wouldn't let them into the walls. Hell and chazir, and they put a pig in instead. Kevan shegi lachatzi koma, as soon as the pig got to half the height of the wall, na'atzi parnav b'choma, it stuck its nails into the wall. Viniz da'azea, eretz yisrael, abar me'od parsal, burnt mid parsa, and Israel shook. And at that time, Amru, Arur, Sheigadel, Chazir, cursed are all who raise pigs, Ve'arur, Sheinamed, Bino, Chachma, Yivanit, and cursed are those who teach their children Chachma, Yivanit. So, what is this Chachma, Yivanit, and what exactly does it mean? It was forbidden. So, if you look at Rashi, Rashi tells you, what is Chachma, Yivanit? Remizot. He tells you very simple. Is it Greek philosophy?
Secrets.
No, it is code. Some sort of secret code. How does he know that that's what it is? What?
For what? Secret code for like...
For communicating.
For in general, okay.
It says a guy can like...
Because that's what it says! What is Chachma Yevanit here? Is that they this person who Chachma Yevanit gave over the secret message. How you can defeat... How you can defeat Hyrcanus... whoever was inside. Astrobilius, or Hyrcanus the answer. How you can defeat him? He tells him, he whispers the secret to him in Chachma Yevanit. So Rashi says, what's Pshat in Chachma Yevanit? It's not cursed who learns Greek wisdom. What is it? Don't teach. Yeah, don't learn this code that people use who are traitors. Right? Nishta.
Do you mean Greek language?
So it sounds like it's not Greek language. It sounds like it's a particular. I don't know if it's the dialect. I don't know if it's some sort of code that the Greeks use. Right? Who knows what it is? Right? It doesn't seem to be the Greek language either. Right? Because it's. Right? That's why Rashi says Remizot. It's some sort of. Right? Hinted code because.
Might be a specific type of cipher.
Yeah, who knows what it is? I don't know what it is. But the point is that the simple pshat in the Gemara, and you see why Rashi is led to this, is that it's Chachma Yevanit, Greek wisdom. Does this Gemara tell you anything about problematic knowledge?
No.
I'm sorry. It tells you about problematic codes. Does it tell you anything about learning philosophy, anything like that? No. Now, this is very strange, because this sounds like what the Chachma Yevanit is talking about in Sadi Tet. Not really, that's what Tosas is asking, right? Meaning, what on Sadi Tet, it sounds like whatever Chachma Yevanit is, the only problem is Bittul Torah. On Samach Dalet, it's, you're cursed, because this is particular invidious, particularly bad. So what is it? So Tosas here asks the same thing. It says, V'sof Shtei Alechem, it says... Right, on Sadi Ted, it sounds like the only problem is Bittul Torah. And the implication is that if you think that you only need to learn one parak in the morning, one parak at night, you could actually even learn Chachma Yevanit. Right, that's a Tosfos reads the Gemara. Again, this assumes that the Gemara is literal on Sadi Ted, and rather, remember we talked about this last week, is it... That this is the shita that you have to learn tamid, in the sense of constant, not consistent, or is it that it's rhetorical? If you think you know kol ha'Torah kula, so you don't. So go back and learn more. So he says, but what? How do you deal with this implication? Right, where the it seems like the only problem is bittul Torah. So he says, "Hainu echad deikat zorech." The Shemay Krav Malchut. He said, possibility one is that, as we'll see in the Gemara in Sota, even this problematic language is mutter if you are involved in politics. And, you know, look at it now. Look at the Gemara in 4. It tells the whole story that we have here in Menachah. And then it says, so how did Bei Rabban Gamliel learn Chachma Yevanit? So the Gemara says, Shiny Rabban Gamliel, the Krov and the Malchut, Havu, they were close to the monarchy, so they were allowed to learn Chachma Yevanit. Ditanya, Misabar Kumi, Rezim Bidarche Amori, Avdolus Ben Ruben, Etir Lisabar Kumi, there was a certain haircut that was Darke Amori. But they allow this person, Abdul bin Ruvain, to cut this way, even though it would be chukas akum, right? It's a non-Jewish way of cutting your hair. Shukar of l'malchus, because he was close to the government. Shubayz Rav Gamliel, etir lo chachma yivanit. And Shukar of l'malchut, Rav Gamliel's family was allowed to learn this chachma yivanit for the same reason. Now, I don't want to get into the halachic issues of Shukar of l'malchus. Broad dealt with this last year, if you remember.
Yeah.
Right? Does this only apply in a tyranny? Does this even apply in a democracy? And this was the big machlokas between Rabbi Broid and Rabbi Elman after Rabbi Lookstein went to the Obama inauguration in a church. The question was, is he allowed to? Does Karvim Lamalchus apply in democracy? Right? Is it predicated on assumptions of direct v'kuach nefesh, which doesn't happen in democracy? V'chulei. Fascinating halachic sugya, but not for now. So that's possibility one. If you look down in the second wine line, Rabbi Shmuel Mefarsh, to call them Gzerah Haya. Possibility two is maybe this was before the Gzera. And then he goes through a whole discussion whether that's in fact possible. He gives a third possibility, name of Yaakov Bar Shimon, may Kara Gazra lo Kiblu Minayu, Lasov Gazra be Kiblu Minayu. Maybe that there was one takana, but people didn't actually accept it, then eventually they accepted it. The Oje Shlomar de Meikara Kaiba Aruba Alma, Vibar the Kabule, Litusa, Draban and Shar, Lasov Gazra be Asru. The Gamre said maybe there were two levels. At some point it was just an Aruba. It was like it was cursed, but if you want to be cursed, good for you. And then eventually they said it was Mamish Asr, which is what's happening already in the Gemara and Soja, where it sounds like it's Asr. Okay. Interesting questions. But what is... And if you look at Rashi and Sota, Rashi there is consistent with what he says here. Lashon chokmash amro b'nei paltin main sharam b'kirim bo. What is it? It's a court language. That's how he understands it in Sota. But what does that tell us about this Gemara? Does this have anything to do, right? People point to this Gemara and say, you see, you shouldn't learn chokmah about it, by which we mean Greek philosophy. Is that what it means?
No.
Not at all. It's not what it means. And if you look at Shaul Lieberman, in number 6, so... So who is Shaul Lieberman? You should know who he is. So Rabbi Dr. Shaul Lieberman was the head of JTS. He learned in Slabodka, I think.
Was he the one that started out that was a religious rabbi that just started to become a rabbi?
In Slabodka, and then he went to JTS, because you have to remember that in the 50s, the line between Orthodoxy and old school conservative was basically non-existent. People went back and forth from YU to JTS, right? The many shuls, right, went back and forth from the United Synagogue to, right? The line was very small, and himself, he was not Orthodox. That's a denominational label. He wasn't. He was in the conservative movement. He was, for the most part, Shomer, right? I mean, the only thing that he did... the only thing he didn't do was he didn't think you needed a mechitza. He thought you needed separate seating in shul, but you didn't need a mechitza. So his minion didn't have a mechitza. So if you think that you need a mechitza dafka, then he didn't keep that halacha. His shita was he needed separate seating during davening and not a mechitza. Okay? Kachazeh. But Lamaisa knew a tremendous amount of Torah, like mind-boggling amount of Torah. There is this funny letter that we have where he's cousins with the Chazon Ish.
Really?
And at some point he asked a question to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish wrote him back a letter, "Why are you asking me? Everyone knows you're the Talmud Chacham in the family." Like, he's mamish. You don't understand how much this guy knew. He's like if you read his Sefer Tzitzit Kaputa, which is a running commentary of Lamdus, Halacha, and academia, and Greek, and Latin, and everything on every Tosefta in Shas, it's like,
whoa.
He did that on some of Yerushalmi, I mean, whatever. Very smart person. Anyways, also one of the most harif human beings who's ever walked the planet. Had no patience for people who were stupid at all, and was made very clear.
That
sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, his insults are legendary. Quite legendary.
Gotcha.
Yes.
He
really didn't like Neusner. That was what he was really known for. Jacob Neusner holds the record for having written more books than a human being who's ever lived. If you go online, on Wikipedia, there are two Wikipedia entries, one for him and one for the books he's written. It's like, the guy lived 80-something years. He passed away a few years ago. He wrote I forget what it was, 900 books. It's not normal. But part of it was because their quality was not up to snuff. It was really strange. His translation of the Yerushalmi has really, really bad mistakes. It didn't realize that Rebbe Ba is a person, Rebbe Abba, because Aleph drops out in it. So every time Rebbe Ba says something in the Yerushalmi, he says Rebbe came every time, which is insane. It's a person. You should know that if you translate. Anyway, not important. That was why when Lieberman wrote his review of it after writing everything that he didn't like about it, right? He has this line at the end: "In conclusion, there is only one place where this belongs, and that is the wastebasket." Right? This was his. He's very
dang.
He's very, very hairy human being. Not important. Okay. Anyways, that's for entertainment purposes. In all the above mentioned sources, there is no hint of a ban on the study of Greek wisdom or of the Greek language. The injunction involves only the teaching of children. Said, first of all, there are two things you should notice. First of all, this has nothing to do with wisdom or language. Second of all, every time it's about children, right? It's arur, right? It's about teaching. The fear that the teaching of Greek may produce or give aid to future informers could be entertained only with regards to children whose development was yet certain, but not to mature people who seek self-instruction. Although we do not know exactly what the rabbis designated by the term Chacham Yevanit, Greek wisdom, it is obvious that in our case it comprised information which could help the individual in his association with the educated Hellenistic circles of Palestine. The rabbis had therefore a Jewish channel through which Hellenistic culture could be conveyed to them if they wanted to avail themselves of it. The question now arises, what material does Talmudic literature contain which may indicate indicate rabbinic acquaintance with Greek literary sources, not have a direct bearing on the practical life. And then he says, okay, so then he goes into this. So what do they actually know about Greek? And he says, well, the only Greek author that we know Chazal knew was Homer, right? Beyond that, we don't actually know what they know. But this seems to not be what Chachmei Yevanit is about, right? They clearly are involved in Greek culture somewhat, this particular thing they have Xera on. But they clearly have avenues, so they are somewhat familiar with what's going on. And then he goes on to explain, how do we know that they know Homer? And he proves all the places that they know Homer, and goes on.
So this is all just discussion on Greek Davka?
This is Chachmei Yevanit.
Saying like not just, secular, like Roman
no,
or anything.
No, just Chachmei Yevanit.
All right, right.
Just Chachmei. Now, but here's that what?
It's online. I can give you a link. It's on
to what?
Right now.
Yeah. Wait, to what?
Okay, cool. The first thing. I have
if you Google this title, I got this online.
Yeah, it's a PDF.
The whole PDF's online. I just copied from the PDF.
Yeah.
If you just Google Hellenism in Jewish Palestine, you got the whole book. It's
really long.
By the way, the whole Tosefta Kepshuta they just put on Sfari also. It's not on Sfari, on Al HaTorah. On Al HaTorah, I think they put it. Yeah, on Al HaTorah, they just put Tosefta Kepshuta is one of these incredible works. Like, it's just.
Did he always write in English?
No, Tosefta Kepshuta is in Hebrew and Latin and Greek. There were times I'd be reading Tosefta Kepshuta in Gush, and I'd be like,
no.
I don't know what's going on. And then I had one friend who, by the time we got to Gush, so we were 18, he was fluent in Latin, Greek,
what?
German. During yeshiva, taught himself Mandarin, I think. He was quite the language person. So I'd be like, Daniel, what the heck is Lieberman talking about? And then, anyways.
You're reading it in Latin?
What?
You're reading
no, it's Hebrew, but like whenever there's a Latin parish that's relevant, he just puts it in Latin and assumes you know it. You know, oh, figure it out. I don't know. Look, there are certain people who are like that.
Right.
You know, like it was legendary in YU that when Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik would teach, if you didn't know, you didn't look up the old French, he would throw you out of class.
Right.
Right. Like literally throw you out of class. If you didn't know you weren't prepared, he would throw you out. Right. He gave Chabura when I was in YU, and literally there were times he would kick every person out of class, but because he was having the class, he would continue teaching to an empty classroom, and you'd be held responsible for anything you missed, because class happens. Okay.
Serial old French?
No, because Rashi crossed laws, but including one time where someone told me that he asked what a word meant in French, in the old French, and someone suggested it, and he yelled at them. He said, no, that's new French. Why don't you look at old French? And they didn't have they were too scared to tell him that Rav Lichtenstein had told them that's what it meant, because Rav Lichtenstein just assumed, because he knew Rav Lichtenstein is French, right? He just assumed he knew what it meant, but he is. He didn't want to tell him, it was his brother, you know, his brother-in-law said it. You know, it's like, you know, family politics.
Oh my God.
Anyways.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think he's inspired by Lieberman often in terms of his, because his reviews are even more brutal than like Lieberman's reviews are brutal
people.
and Rabbi Soloveitchik's reviews
people.
He's still alive. Chaim Soloveitchik's still alive.
Awesome.
His reviews are even more brutal. They are terrifying. If you've ever read them, they're unbelievable. You know, like it's memorable starting line. Of one of them, which is,
like
I've read good books, I've read bad books, and now I've read, and then he goes on. This is the review. Anyways,
how do
fun time.
Somehow?
What? That's, you can Google that. That's the review of Peter J. Haas's book. That is one of the. Anyways, not important. That's just for fun. Okay, so.
He's quoting Latin. Just literally Latin.
Yeah, anyways.
In Latin.
Good. Now, by the way, where does he prove this from? Okay. But here's the thing. Is. One of the things that's interesting about Agadah in general, it is true of everything, but is that I can prove to you, and I think relatively conclusively, that the majority view in Rishonim, as far as I can tell, and the simple pshat of the Gemara is that Chachmei Yevanit tells you literally nothing about whether you can learn secular subjects, Greek philosophy, or whatever the philosophy, right? Nothing. That's not what it's talking about. The sugya is about Bittul Torah, and Bechal Chachmei Yevanit means some secret codes that informers used.
Okay.
Right, Bechal Elamai. That doesn't stop. That doesn't change the fact that many people use this Gemara to shape their philosophy of to what extent are we allowed to integrate non-Torah into our education. Not surprisingly. So, we can say that there's a pshat in the Agadah, but it doesn't change the fact that if you want to know what people think, this is going to be a good jumping point for people who don't necessarily, aren't necessarily geared at the historical accuracy, or maybe that's what they think it means, or maybe they think Chachmei Yevanit has multiple layers to it and also includes Greek philosophy or philosophy or whatever you think it means. And therefore, analyzing the sugya and the way people wrote about it is a helpful way to get a little bit of a taste into what Oren will give a fuller chabura on, which is what is the value and justification in learning these types of topics. So I figured we might as well, you know, again, even though I don't think it's pshat, it's clearly how many mafarshim took it, and therefore, as a discussion about the value of this stuff, so we should see it. Okay, now let's trace it. So first of all, as Lieberman points out, that how do we know that Chazal knew, were acquainted with the actual culture of Greek? So one of his examples is this Mishnah in Yadayim, that Omrim Tzadikim, Omrim Tzadukim, very different. The Sadducees said, Kovlin no Aleichem Prushim, we are angry at you, we complain about you, we have a grudge, whatever. Oh, Pharisees, Shatem Omrim Kedva Kodesh Mitamani Yadayim, because you say that Torah makes your hands impure. The Sifre Homeris and Homer does not.
Homer. Yeah.
Said, how could that be? How could it be that you say you touch a Torah, your hands are Tameh? But you touch Homer, it's not. Which is, by the way, the halacha. Right? If you touch a Sefer Torah, you have to wash your hands. There's Exer Derabanan. Right? Why? Why is Sefer Torah Matameh Yadayim?
Because what people would do is that they would like touch it, like while they were reading the Torah, they would eat, which would cause crumbs fall in Torah, which means rats.
Close. No, that's not what they would do. They would
Close. Store them in.
They would store it with truma because both of them were kadosh. That was the problem. Yeah. Not that they would eat while they were learning per se. They would store it with truma because it was tahor. But the problem was then the rats would come and eat because we had kodesh. And therefore, what they did was they said it's tamei, and therefore, if you touch it, you have to wash your hands. And this way, it would keep people from it would prevent people from keeping.
And also, if you put it next to truma,
if you touch your hand, then you touch the truma, or it touched the truma, so you'd be mitamei. And therefore, whatever, I think only your hands, but whatever. And this way, it would encourage you not to store it with truma, and then the rats wouldn't come vichulei. Okay.
Just say, don't store it with truma.
You could, but it's more effective to say it's tamei, and then you wouldn't do it. Right. You could say that, but they don't.
You could say that, but people had been saying that.
Also, just saying that the horse seems to be not flattering. Or at minimum, it's like saying it's worse than Torah, but it feels like...
No, that's all it's saying. So let's analyze, what does it say? What does it tell us? It tells us they're affiliated with Homer, and do they have a negative view of Homer?
Not
particularly. They just say, it's not Torah. I'm willing to put my name behind that.
Yeah.
Homer is Nish Chumish. I know, like, a huge Chiddush. Okay, wonderful. Great. Homer, Kilchen, Ben Zakkai. V'chi ein lanu ala prushim elazu bilvad. I said, that's your only problem with us. I got a better one for you. The bones of a donkey are tahor, but the bones of Yochanan Kohen Gadol are tamei. Now, what does that prove? Like, what do you want from my life? Right? He said, you know why? Because sometimes things are tamei because of their value. Right? The law, human life and the laws of human life is something significant, and therefore it imparts tuma when human life leaves. A chamor doesn't. It's not like holy things are always not susceptible to tuma. That's not how things work. And why do we have this because we don't want you to start using, you know, your parents' bones as tools.
Same
thing is true here. Sefer Torah chaviv, so tamei. Homer nisht, and Homer is not. But what do we know from this Mishnah? Basically,
they know
who Homer is, and he's not Torah. It's not chumish. Okay, good be chiddush. Good.
Also, that they were handling it.
And they're handling it. Yeah, Chanami. Rabbi Kiva, Omer Yerushalmi, Afakar Bizrom Achitzonim. The Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva says, if you read Kore Sefer the Sefer Mechitzonim, Ein Lo Chelak Olam Haba. So he says, what are these Chitzon? Sefer Mechitzonim? Eight. Right, this is Rabbi Kiva in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin.
Yeah, I know.
So the Gemara says, what is that? You go and Sefer Ben Sira, Sefer Ben Lana. These are the Apocrypha, like Ben Sira. But he says, Aval, Sifrei Hamirim, or Hamiris, the Chol Sergeant of Gonvailach, Akori Ben, Gagor, Rabbi Geret. But Homer, anything else? Okay. You read it, it's like reading a letter, meaning neutral. It's neutral. Right? My time of Yoter Mehema, Beni Zahar, Ligayot, Nenuli, Gelot, Nenu. And he said, why? And again, now we get into a little bit of pshat of the issue. It's not necessarily the pshat in our Gemara, but it's, he said, why is this true? Because you're allowed to read them, but what are they not meant for? Yigiyah. I think you can read them. You can read these things, but you don't delve into them. That's not what they're made for. So you see, this is not a negative view. What is it saying about, at least about Homer? We don't know about what they would hold about other works, but what are Chazal's view of Homer? Yeah, you know, whatever. Like,
you'd rather you be doing Torah, but...
Fine, but like, you want to read it, you know, a little bit before bed, you want to read it in the bathroom, I don't know, right? Whatever.
Right, Chachma Yivanit. It's not.
Right there, right? And so, what do you see? Chachma Yivanit, the negative one, is some code that was used for, like, informers. What do we know their opinion of Homer is?
Seems like a good
guy. You shouldn't be spending all your time. Now, this is essentially, again, it may not be pshat in our Gemara, but this view, which is that secular wisdom is something that is legitimate to engage in, but not with undue
death. Well, there might be a difference between like literature and
blah. And a chanami. But I want to construct how people got here. Again, I'm saying this may not be pshat, but how did people read this Gemara? So there is a group, if you want to understand the modern conception, why is it that when I read this Gemara, everyone jumps and says, oh, this is the Toru Mata Gemara. Can you learn philosophy? Because that's how it became used in the 20th century. Or even the 19th, right? Or even earlier than the 20th century. But it's following a certain trajectory where it takes lines like this and it reads it into our Gemara. So if you look at the Griz, for example, the Griz says, V'nira b'zeh, da'isr l'olmon chachma yivanit, d'kaya azev aror. What is it, asr l'olmon chachma yivanit? Now here he clearly doesn't mean the code you'll see in a moment. He clearly thinks of this as some sort of secular wisdom.
From some
because... What?
Oh, no, this is
I mean, these are all the same, right? This is the parallel Gemara in Sota.
Okay.
Right? It's exactly parallel, hence I put the ellipsis. Right? That is the Gemara in Sota and Nachla plus two lines.
Yeah.
That's if you're learning it for wisdom. You're learning it because you want to save people, fine. Even though right now you don't need it, came in the yachal. Love him is it zarchat tibur lo mid l'shem ze gamu karv l'malchut the yachal idezel lazor l'tibur lo yichlal aror. Actually, no, he may still be talking about the code. But what does he say? He said even whatever chachma yivan it is, what do you learn from this? That you're allowed to learn it as long as you're not learning it l'shem chachma. You want to lose it for practical purposes? Fine. You're learning it l'shem chachma?
If it's a code, what is l'shem chachma?
That's why I tend to think he probably doesn't mean a code. He probably thinks this is philosophy or wisdom. And therefore what he's saying is if you're learning it because you think there's wisdom or something like that, that's a problem. You're learning it for instrumental purposes? That's fine. So, again, what is he reading into this Gemara? But now he says something... One second. He says something very surprising. He says, "Aval gabaya isra de bitl Torah, bazeh binin shiha b'shas halimad gufa tzarech tzibar datzal tzibar docha bitl Torah." He said, that would be true if bitl Torah weren't a function. So how does he read the Gemara Menachot back in the conversation? He says, if bitl Torah is a function, it's not enough to say, well, maybe down the road I'll need it for instrumental purposes. To solve the bitl Torah purpose, you need an immediate purpose. So you're not kari ba'arur if you need it, if you're doing it to save the Jewish people. But if you're doing it for the long term, and not right now, you do have a bitl Torah problem. That's how he reads it. Avalam hashtad ayin neim lomitzar chatzibur, liyochol, liyot bizachar, gong tzal tzibur, enitcha bitl Torah b'bnezeh. Liyosed nirad dar, jishari lomon chach meyavanez, lamishakar b'malchus, enim b'keder d'chia. He said, that's his havamina. And then he said, maybe not. Maybe it's not dechia, maybe it's hutra, and maybe, right, this is havamina, this is very lavdish, is that learning chachma yivanis to save the Jewish people is dechuya, and therefore it's aser mishum batal Torah, and then he says, nah, I don't think that's true. It's mutter, because it's hutra. If you're involved in politics, then you have to know it. You can, it even solves the batal Torah problem. Now, I don't know if he thinks it's Greek wisdom, or he thinks it's the code. It's unclear to me what he thinks. I think he's probably somewhere in between, and is already going in the, this Gemara has something to tell me about how I should approach secular wisdom. The answer is as an instrument, but never think of it l'shem chachma. Yes.
He asked like, how would a code be l'shem chachma? If you're like a linguist,
yeah, like, I don't know, whatever he means.
The chachma is very evident.
I mean, so
if you're like a linguist, you can't study chachma yivanit specifically. Do other ones.
I mean, if the problem is that like we don't want you to become like a Greek informer, what's the problem?
I mean, the chachma,
I would say even go the other way. Chachma would be like l'shem chachma would be like hey, now I know Greek codes and I can stab the Jews in the back if I want to. And the shame of...
No, that doesn't sound like chachma. Chachma doesn't sound that... Yeah. that negative. Like, I wouldn't.
Like you.
Yeah.
Like you're
I don't know.
To understand how language works.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, that's the question on the original Gezeira. But that's what it is.
I don't understand.
Okay. Well, let's look at Sfas Emes. I think the Sfas Emes also is of the school where he doesn't say it explicitly, but I already think that he thinks this Gemara is more about secular wisdom. And this is how he reads it. He says, the kasha im kain hadra kush leduch lekevin lotzorech asur b'lav halchim itam arad d'hacha yishlomer d'vitam tzorech malchus ein lahat rak matzorech lo. He said, look, for the government, you're only allowed to learn the minimum. Aval yeter hachachma yivan ashen b'tzorech malchus asur mitam lo yamush. But everything else is asur because of bittul Torah. Now again, does he think it's problematic intrinsically? No, it's a aval mitam arur and he says, again, if you need it for the government, so you leave the Tom of Arur, because you're doing it for instrumental purpose, but if you don't need it immediately, or something like that, then you still have a Bittul Torah problem. The curse. He said, maybe what he's saying about Rabbi Gamliel is they were so involved in government that they always had a hat there. Uve ikra kushiasam lude rema yenir de rak lumot has been no bial do so aro mishum shi aduk behem biyoser. He says, I think that really it's only Osir will teach children. Why? Because no problem in learning it. What's the problem? Children will become committed to it. Similar to Lieberman, right? Aval chacham bedash she wrote to Basra lima lo ero, but a chacham, and this is where I tend to think he's already thinking more philosophy or something like that, because he's saying, but if you're a chacham, he didn't say if you're older. He says if you're a chacham, then maybe it's okay. Mu kushas marachal mi boshal titus, etc. We'd already seen the other svasena, so let's skip it. Okay. Once you get to the 20th century, though, the polemic read of this Gemara that this is a statement that you're not allowed to learn other wisdoms comes to the fore. Specifically, why? I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I gave it to you. Why? Think about what's happening in the 20th century.
Emancipation.
World War I.
Two words.
That's the closing.
Yeshiva University. I kid you not. These are not theoretical. This is a response to YU.
What?
Emancipation.
This is a YU. Okay. YU.
What are you
saying? Early 20th century. Didn't they close down Volusian for trying because the government wanted?
That's not 20th. It's 19th.
That was still 19th.
Oh my god, no one wants
Civ. That's if it's that's late 19th. Late 19th.
I'm sorry, I mixed up late 19th.
Okay. But
I have a follow up.
No, so really it's because 19th century you're dealing with what it's responding to two things. 19th century, who are they being asked about? Rapersh. Right? Rapersh is cult, right, where there was engagement in cult. And 20th century it's YU. Right. Now, Rav Elchanan was one of the biggest haters on YU. Like, not like in theory. Like, he knew YU, didn't like YU, and as the story goes, when he came to America to fundraise at some point, he said there are two major yeshiva in America, Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, which is YU, and Torah Vidas. And he said there are two main yeshivas in America. One is a kosher yeshiva with a treif name, and one is a treif yeshiva with a kosher name. Right? So, YU, which is Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, named for Yitzchak Elchanan Specter, kosher name, treif institution, and Torah Vidas, the other way around. Okay.
Interesting.
Anyways, so he was asked. So during the 20th century, you had these posts and were being asked about it. Now, Rochanan is pretty extreme. He's not the most extreme. He's not the Debreziner. The Debreziner has this really wild tshuva in the Ber Moshe, where he says it's usur to learn Torah by the Rosh Hashiva at YU because you might realize that they're actually Tamidei Chachamim, and then you'll think that their path is legitimate. So you can't learn Torah by them, because then you'll think that just because Tamidei Chachamim that proves that what they do is legitimate, you can't learn Torah. by them. Okay, this is an actual tshuva in the different Sinner. That is a much more wild tshuva than this one. There also were several that were tshuva that were listed in by Shimon Schwab. Shimon Schwab, who is the heir to the Breuer's community, so the heir several times over to Rav Hirsch's community, is a little bit more was a little bit more hesitant about the Rav Hirschian model, and therefore he wrote to several Gedolim to get opinion. So this is where a lot of it is written. That was Rav Baruch Bears in this context.
So can we just stop for a second and point out that point that they were seen earlier, it's essentially learning from why you wish you were the same as learning from like straight up a Kofrim. Because isn't that the reason?
That's what he says, because they are Kofrim. Not the same, it is, not like the same as an equivalent. That is
Kofrim?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes,
oh,
but Talmidei Chachamim, and that's the danger, is that they are indeed, that's the amazing thing about that tshuva. They are Talmidei Chachamim, boy, Gaval, people might realize that. It's a mind.
But what definition are they people for? I don't understand. If you were Messiah,
let's say you were rooted to Jesus Christ. We the tshuva in the Bar Moshe. What do you want from my life? Okay. So here's the Shaila. He says, "Im mutar litasek bechokhma chitzoniyot uveiza ofen yitkayem ayater zeh." Tshuva. Hashaila hazot nechleka lechama chalakim. So here's what I got to say to you. There are several elements to this. One, im hitaskut hazot mivial lekriat svarim sheish baminut asur. If it leads you to read things which are heretical, then it is asur, and then you violate an isur d'oraisa. I'll say this outside because of los asurachar levavchem, and kfir is worse than avodah zara. Because and then he goes on to prove that kfir is worse than avodah zara, and therefore. The last line of this paragraph, just to understand this, and therefore it's Abu Zrayu Devo Dezaru, Fizar Kriba Sifremin, and Asura, Fil Makum Pikoch Nefesh. You can't read these books, even if your life depends on it. Okay, it's Yahar Gval Yafor.
What happened to Mord? Abu Zrayu is a former.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Fear is worse. That's the paradigm. Abu Zrayu is just details.
What happened to Karav
Lamachos?
What? What happened to Karav Lamachos?
Yaharik Valley, for Nisht. Okay.
No, Rabbi, Daniel's question is, how can you say that Kfira is worse than Avodah Zarah if Avodah Zarah is Kfira?
Well, I think that's his point, is that no, I don't think it's, no, I think Avodah Zarah is a prat. The real.
No, he's saying
the real
is worse than like bowing down to an idol.
Right, like the real, right? The Rambam, by the way, writes. The Rambam goes in this direction. The Rambam goes in this direction. It's not like crazy. The Rambam does have
just
indications.
That
of what? The kfira is that Abu Dzar is really usher because of its kfira element.
Yeah,
but I mean,
to say that kfira is Yahweh.
Oh, I didn't say that. Well, he sort of does. Well, he sort of does. Because the Rambam says that the reason that what you learn from Ir Nidachat. Is that there's a mitzvah to kill kofrim, right? And like,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, reading it is not like
not exactly like that, but sort of like that. Anyway, no point. That's point one. And he says, bet im ein sarach lekro b'sifrei minut. Let's say you don't have to read actual heresy, but you have to go to college. Oi, gymnasium or college. And you see that by your children going to there, they become close to non-Jews. Intermarriage, good, fine, okay.
It's total,
good.
Totally real.
What's that? Gimel. Gimel. Okay, yeah. guys, Gimel. Says, okay, let's say you're not reading heresy. You're not reading heresy. And you're not doing it to become close non-Jews. You're doing it for a job. So he says, then, that's fine. Jobs are fine. Right? We talked about this. Jobs are fine because he says, unless, when is it not fine for a job? What do you think his next thing is? If you see that your son is cut out for Talmud Torah because Reb Nehorai. Right, if he's cut out for Talmud Torah, he should just learn Talmud Torah. Okay, we talked about these Gemaras last week. Dalit. Aye, this is where he gets it. Heicha she'ein tzarach l'lom debetar umnut. But what if you don't need it for a job? El shirotz l'shtat shtei abba. You just want to enjoy. Yesh makam l'asr mishum bitl Torah. One, it's asr mishum bitl Torah. And everything that we talked about last week, because you're giving in chashivas, like chashivas at Torah, and you read through it, and you have to remember that the tachlit yitzira hi ra katara, while tachlit kol briyara hi Torah levada. The first of all, there's a bitul Torah problem. And he says, hey, we karagadol nishtab shu ba'on mivinatam. And this principle that learning second... Now, so we saw this last week, that one possible way of reading this is that this is about bitul Torah, but he thinks it's more than about not learning. What is it about?
Anti-learning.
And this is what we... Anti-learning, right? Like Rebaruch Ber, right? Even though not as strong as Rebaruch Ber in that sense. He says, Ikara gadol hazeh, nishtabshu ma'od b'minidatam, shechshivu limodim chitzoniim kamo limara Torah. Ki sfuru ma'yud kamo shetzarech lamo Torah lishma, chein tzarech lamo limodim chitzonim lishman. There are these people who think that just like you have to learn Torah lishma, you have to learn other wisdoms lishma. And he said, you know how I know it? They learn it not because they have to, because they want to, from rabbis who have PhDs. Right, this is the opposite. Said, no, Torah is lishman. Other wisdom is only not lishma. Only it's instrumental. It's amazing, I go back to Ashkenazis when I'm reading this. I should. University. So not only do they find time to work, they have to go to university. When are they going to learn Torah? But Torah sack. The Torah puts on sackcloth. Shechnisu tsarasa levesa, that it brings a co-wife into the house, l'man harima, to cause it pain. Umash shagur b'fiyam amaymar tov Torah and derech eretz. They justify it with this Hershkian line. The Torah is good with derech eretz. Hine b'midrash rabba. It says that derech eretz is maisim tovim, etc. Next paragraph. Now some people are doing tshuva on this, right? And he says, instead, now they should teach their children not go to university, and the more learn Torah, even resubach, v'loha marba b'pilosofia, right? Called marba b'Torah, now marba b'pilosofia. And then he goes on. Now, what do you see from Olchadon? Right, Ochanan is a classic example of how you take this type of a Gemara and you read it in a modern context. He says there's two problems. One is the Bittul Torah problem. What's the other problem? The wisdom you're learning is some of it is potentially Kfira. Right? So there's a double problem. One is what you're learning is problematic, and the second is even if it's not problematic, it's Bittul Torah. Now, what's the biggest problem that he's going to have in the history of Judaism to solve this issue, that is going to challenge him?
The Rambam.
The Rambam. Thank you. What's his answer? What do you think his answer is?
Rambam's a kofar.
No.
He needed to combat the kofar.
Because his first language is Arabic.
Yes, exactly. That he had to do it. So is that he did it to in service of the Torah. He did it to respond to Kofram, and...
He was Kara from Alcos.
What?
He was.
No, he says also, that's because he was very, very smart and knew Kala Torah Kula. Aval ba'anashim k'tanim kamonu ador poshut have a shchiach hazeka. He knew that he wouldn't be damaged because he knew so much Torah. We'll all become Kofram, so we can't do it. And this Gemara becomes a... Right, and becomes part of this dialogue. That there are two problems. What you're doing is heretical, and what you're doing, even if it's not heretical, it's Bittul Torah. And that's what you should learn from Gemaras like this. You should always be learning and not looking for the other wisdoms. What's the response? Okay, very quickly. Mostly, all right, we'll deal with it in this Gemara, okay? But what's the response? If you don't want to read it this way, right, this is going to be more of a pre, at this point, Hanukkah shir for the next 10 minutes or so? 9 minutes? What's the response? So what are the, what's the response?
It's not really about philosophy, these Gemaras.
Well, so there's the textual response, but give me the substantive response. Right? There's the, in this Gemara, is that what it's talking about? No. But now give me the substantive response. What's the substantive response to this critique?
And within these philosophies, there is a kernel of Torah.
Good. So the well. So let me be careful. Let's be careful. No, let's be careful.
Maybe these philosophies are.
Let's talk about it broadly. The fundamental response is going to be, it's not Bitl Torah because it's valuable. There are different ways of taking that. Rabbi Lam, in his book Karomada, obviously he right. This is really what he does. He outlines the response, the critiques of Karomada, and he says there are those who say it's Kfira. Okay, right. Kfira, we can deal with the problem of Kfira. But the fundamental problem, he says, that I really have to deal with is the Bitl Torah. Right? Because Kfira, okay, we can talk about it. This is problematic, but science isn't, right? What, not everything is Kfira. How do you deal with Bitl Torah? Big Gadol, you say it's valuable. How do you say it's valuable? So he says, there are different models that I can give you. So quickly, what models could I give you?
It is Torah.
So, he says, the Rambam provides two models. One is that some of what we call Mada is Hechsher L'Torah. Right? Is it prepares you for Torah. What does the Rambam say that explicitly about? Math. Right? Math is not Torah according to the Rambam. It's necessary to develop wisdom. It's not Torah. It's necessary to develop philosophy. Therefore, you shouldn't be doing the base medrash. You should do it later. Right? And then there are certain parts of it the Rambam says are
actual.
The ultimate of Torah. Right? The ultimate of Torah. Which does he think that is?
Philosophy.
And I, how does he justify that? How could it be that Aristotle is Torah for the Rambam? Exactly. Meaning it's really truth and philosophy. Either it's true or it's not. Right? Metaphysical truth, they're true or they're not. If they're true, they're Torah. If they're not, they're not. Right? So that's one model.
And so if it's true, is on that Torah?
Yes. For the Rambam, yes. Hey, that's one model. What else?
Evolution.
What other models are there?
In philosophy. That's Torah.
Yeah, in philosophy. Yeah.
And science.
Now, what's the problem with limiting yourself to the Rambam? That what is the Rambam? The Rambam is very specific. Math, science, Hechsher. Right? Or, sorry, math, Hechsher. Certain parts of science, right, are, and philosophy, but what about literature, art, any value for that? Lav Dafka, right? He says, now there are other models. There are, and I won't get into the exact nuances between them, but he says there's another model, which is the Rav Kook Kabbalistic model, Hasidic model, which he acknowledges are related. Now he says, obviously, he said, Hasidim weren't in favor of Mada. But he says the philosophy of Hasidut and Kabbalah, as Rav Kook presented it, in slightly different ways, allow for an even more embracing thing, which is, Hasidus' fundamental insight was that everybody, everything in life, experiencing the totality of life, but recognizing it's from God, and using it for Avodat Hashem, makes it not just instrumental, but intrinsically valuable. And therefore, you're willing to go as far as saying that Atish is Avodah B'Gashmi, you're worshipping God through eating. He says, if you think that's true, engaging your mind in ways that will deepen your understanding of the world and God, if eating can be Avodah, then for sure using your mind can be avoda intrinsically. So that's actually Rabbi Lam's suggested model. Then he goes through Rav Hirsch's model. And again, there are different nuances. But fundamentally, what's the insight? That if the fundamental critique is Bitl Torah, then the response is to come up with a way of explaining that what we do is Torah. But according to that, what is critical for Mada? And this is what Elchanan Dafka doesn't like, but Rabbi Lam says, no, that's exactly the point.
That it adds to Torah.
Is the Lishma aspect, right? Is not really Lishma the same way Torah, but almost, meaning if you recognize that you're doing it because this is part of a holistic religious experience, that's what makes it not Bitl Torah. That doesn't mean it's not this, it doesn't mean, he says, you don't have to say it's Talmud Torah the way the Rambam does, that some of it is Hechsher, some of it's Torah. You have to recognize that a holistic religious experience has multiple levels, and you don't, right? Maybe it's not Torah Tzrufa. That doesn't mean it's not part of a religious experience, which makes it not.
It's weird that the Mishnah didn't say Homer was a Bitl Torah, if you say that literature is.
Good. Again, you can look for other models, but I think if you want to understand the dialogue and how this comes out of the Gemara and what people are doing and what Rabbi Lam is doing, right? Fundamentally, in a nutshell, I've just summarized the point of this 200-page book, not all the details. He goes through firm arguments for each one, and then he goes through the reverse model of the cultural value of it. But his point is that fundamentally, if the response is Bitl Torah, then what you have to justify is how does this fit into a religious framework? Now, he goes for what he calls this Hasidish / Kabbalistic model, which he is a blender of Cook and the way he understands Hasidus, to say that it's part, right, it's intrinsically valuable. What I've given you here, and again, we have 3 minutes, I can't read it, but very quickly to throw out the ideas, and I would do it next week, because I want you to think about this over Hanukkah, so I'm going to give it to you now. Specifically Greek, right? The Gemara is, of all the things that you have, right, on the one hand, you look at this Gemara, oh, Greek is the worst, but Chazal, if anything, thought it was the best of the wisdoms. The Mishnah Megillah notes that the only thing you're allowed to write a Sefer Torah in other than Hebrew is Greek, and the Gemara in Yerushalmi says that's because it's Yaftel Him Liyefet Vishkan Alei Shem. The only thing that can, in some sense, encompass shame, meaning the Torah, is Yefet. Which tells you that Dafka, it's not that Greek is the most anathema, it's the one that has the most... dead, and I gave you a very long sicha from Rav Lichtenstein, but it's in English, so I don't feel bad just giving it to you to read. But he basically notes that even though it's true that the Greeks were still idolatrous, he does note that the Greeks did begin very important things. There's reason that they're closer, because even to the sense they still talk about pagans, they're the first people who started talking, even the pagan world, about transcendence. Right, you read Aristotle and Plato, yeah, they talk about these gods, but they're talking about, right, meta ideas. They start that machshava, which already leads people to believe, maybe they didn't really believe in the pagan gods. They just talk, so that's the talk of the... But they teach transcendence. He said, on the other hand, there are things that you have to learn, which is they're too humanistic. Right? They don't talk about a transcendent god, they talk about transcendence, but then they talk about humanity, but... The real challenge, and this just comes back to the other point of Rav Elchanan, is that one is to recognize there's value, the other is to realize, but there really are problems. Like, one is to recognize there's value, the other is to say, okay, but once I engage in it, because I can feel it can edify me, I still have to be able to recognize the differences. And that's part of the challenge that sort of Hanukkah gives to us. So I gave you these few pieces from Rav Lichtenstein. The only thing I'll add, because we really don't have a minute, is that it is always important. There was a symposium on the Lehrer House about this last year. Maybe we'll try to find some time to talk about this next week, even though it'll be after Hanukkah, but at least enough for Machshava now, is that because you're always gauging things in terms of how it asks your spirituality, we do have to ask what this looks like in a postmodern world, where the assumptions of a lot of the quote-unquote Mada are not just like, a little bit of fear here, a little bit of fear there, but I can get the fundamental idea, but are fundamentally at odds with the notion of truth in general. Right? Meaning, if the whole notion is that Mada can be part of a healthy religious life, what do you do when that which is the culture, the philosophy, is not just, you know, slightly problematic, but is actually fundamentally anathema? If you're being honest about why you're engaging it, then you also have to be discerning in terms of which Mada you go into, and that, I think, is really the challenge of Hanukkah. Okay, I've given you a lot of Chovr Machshava. Maybe we'll take a little bit next time and actually read through it, but it's all English, so hopefully you can read it and get some Hanukkah thoughts in. Okay, but at least I've set up the model for you in honor of the Chag. Okay.